You are listening to Living in the Yes with Reverend Dr. Deborah L. Johnson. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be back with Rev D on the other side. 347-426-3346. Press one on your keypad.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.
Hello, this is motivational speaker Les Brown, and you're listening to Life Conversations. It's going to change your life.
Ready to live in the yes? Join me, Rev D, the Reverend Dr. Deborah Johnson, here Tuesday evenings, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific. Call in with your questions and comments as together we explore spiritual qualities and learn practical tools that unleash our spiritual power. We mix in some music, spoken word, readings, prophetic utterances. You want in on this? Living in the Yes, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, right here on Light Conversations Radio.
Join Lisa Iverson and Life Coach Today for Ancestral Blueprints at 12 p.m. Eastern on the last Wednesday of the month. Learn how the unacknowledged truths in your Ancestral Blueprints may still be influencing your life today and how to bring awareness to the truths that want to be acknowledged. Join Lisa Iverson and Life Coach Today, 12 p.m. Eastern, every last Wednesday of the month on LifeConversationsRadio.com.
Are you ready to come out to play? To passionately love and appreciate who you are? Join me, Mombasa Sophia, on the playground of life, the play experience, every Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern, where we always serve a raw, delicious smorgasbord of healing the mind, the heart, and the soul into this spectacular circle of life. Are you ready? See you on the playground. Be there or be square. The Play Experience, 7 p.m. each Thursday, here on LifeConversationsRadio.com.
This is Life Coach Ade, host of the Ask Life Coach Ade radio show on Life Conversations Radio. Well, you know, no matter how much you grow in consciousness, no matter how much you know, you are going to interact with other people. So what's the point of being spiritual and being enlightened without learning to get along with others? Well, that's what the show is about. On the show, I share tools and techniques and just inspire you to celebrate your relationships, to celebrate who you are, because together we make a difference. You know, we need each other. And when we unite together, we can make magic happen. We can shift our perception and create miracles in our lives. Join me every Monday, 12 p.m. Eastern on LifeConversationsRadio.com.
Life Conversations, committed to assisting you move from where you are to where you want to be. Have courage, make that move.
Life Conversations, it's all about positivity, it's all about self-empowerment, it's all about Life Conversations.
Life Conversations Radio, be the change you want to see.
Yes, you are listening to Living in the Yes with Reverend Dr. Deborah L. Johnson. We call her Rev D. She is in the house. We are reawakening. We're going deeper into our spiritual nature. Let me bring her on. Hello, Rev D.
Hello there. How are you doing?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing great. And welcome to all of our listening audience. I hope that you were getting something out of those clips that Ade just played.
I'm gonna do this. I haven't screened this person.
Ade, so I always pronounce your name wrong. I don't know why.
No, you don't actually. And I think I created this because I've been saying this for a few weeks, and I said one day she's gonna ask me because I know I say it different from you, but I don't even pronounce my name correctly. Because
how is it supposed to be pronounced?
Well, the right pronunciation is Ade. I-D. Yes. But in the Western tongue, I don't like the way it sounds. So people say, Ade, Ade, Ade. So I just go with it. So I don't even say Ade. But when I talk to my father,
I like that.
Thank you.
I like that. Okay, I can do that.
Yes, Ade. There you go. So you probably be the first person who will say it the right way, and you will have my permission to do it. Everybody else, I say, no, no, no. Just do it the way you do it. Someone once told me that your name is the sweetest sound you ever hear. And I was like, really? Nah. And then I remembered how when people really slaughter my name, how it makes me angry. I'm like, oh, okay, this must be true. There's something about the name that just like, oh. So, yeah.
My favorite thing around the name is it actually, this particular story that I'm going to tell is the reference point for the letter in Your Deepest Intent, the second volume of my Letters from the Infinite series, called My Name is Safe in Your Mouth.
Mm.
And it's this story, I read this on email a number of months ago, actually years ago, and these four-year-olds were being asked the question, what is love? And this little boy, Billy, says, you know someone loves you by how they say your name. He says, they say your name different. You know your name is safe in their mouth. That was it.
Yes.
When someone loves you, they say your name different. You know your name is safe in their mouth.
Yes. Yes. See, there it is. See, so no matter how, well, as long as they don't slaughter it, let me qualify it. But the people who pronounce it differently, these people love me. So when I hear it, it's just like, ah. So when you say it the way you say it, I'm just like, ah. Yeah. But when I go places to somewhere where they need to call my name and they go, auntie, never mind. I'm here. I am. I know you're calling me. Don't finish it. I got it. I'm in the office ahead of you. My name is safe in your mouth. Yes, yes, yes. Rev D, I want to ask you a question. I want to hear your thoughts because I love your thoughts. I love your insights, of course. And I want to say that my question is around what I call divine coincidences. You know, we say there are no accidents, there are no coincidences. For me, I see coincidences as things, several things happening at once. And of course, America is going through a major shift, major change in so many ways. But the highlight right now is around the Confederate flag. And when I think of the incident in Charleston, South Carolina, the bombing was around Juneteenth. I think it was June 17th or something like that. Mm-hmm. And what that church represented. So for those who don't know, I just tell you that a young man in South Carolina went to a church, sat in Bible studies, and after Bible study, I don't know if it's after or during, he killed 9 people. So that's a big story in the news right now. But there's some things that were just symbolic about the church, around the date, and the conversation that's happening. It's almost like it's meant to happen. Now, from a human perspective, we say, well, it's a shame that it's happening under these circumstances. And what I see is it's the same divine order when I pick up a book and open to a page and I get what I need. If you're doing readings, tarot card readings, oracle cards, you pull a card and it speaks exactly to what you're dealing with. So I want to know your thoughts about, because, well, it seems to me that in every moment, not even seems, I know this, that everything is as it should be, even though when I'm having a challenging time, I don't always think that. But it seems like in every moment, everything is as it should be. And if we're able to see beyond the veil we can see the coincidences that are happening that is helping us move forward. What are your thoughts on coincidences?
Well, I don't think it was a coincidence by any stretch of the imagination. And I'm finishing up a piece on it right now. And I've been speaking about it. And I feel like there's some basic things that we as a public kind of need to get and understand. This was a hate crime. And hate crimes are very specific. As a matter of fact, I just got through teaching about hate crimes a couple of weeks ago in prison on how to prevent hate crimes. Yeah.
This was before the incident?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe 2 weeks before the incident. There's a particular program that we do in the prison called the Impact Program, which goes through, it's a four-month, very intense program that goes through all these different crimes and the impact that it has on the victim's family, the community, the offender, the offender's family, you know, and all that. We go through some pretty gnarly stuff, and we use it as a backdrop, really, to talk about things like forgiveness and grief, anger management, you know, all these kinds of things. And there's a particular segment that I always have around hate crimes and these exercises that I do creating a cross-racial dialogue. It's very deep, and it's very, very interesting. And everybody always loves it. It's intense, but they, you know, but they love it. And the reason why I say it's a hate crime and why it's important that we remember that is that the purpose of a hate crime is to terrorize. What makes something a hate crime is when the person or their property is assaulted, attacked for no other reason than the fact that they belong to some specific group. That's it. Most of the time in hate crimes, the parties don't even know each other. And I say that it's assumed that you are part of that group, because you may not be. Like, somebody may think you're Muslim and you're really not. Or gay bash, you thinking you're gay, but you're really not. But it's that association that's what you are. Okay. But the person who's attacked just stands in proxy. It really isn't about them. It's about the entirety of their group. And it's meant to terrorize. It's meant to send a message. You know, he even said to, you know, one of the women, I'm going to leave you alive so that you can tell everybody about this. And the thing about hate crimes is that they are really pathetic power plays to try to keep the status quo. They are designed to put the other group in their place, like on notice. And the hate crimes go up when there is this sense of being threatened. So there's this kind of perverse irony here. It's like for every action, there's a reaction. That when hate crimes rise, that is the evidence itself that the power structure is feeling threatened. So we may at one point say, are we going backwards? Is this kind of stuff going backwards when we're supposed to go going forward? Well, it really is the evidence of going forward. And I'm reminded of something that Martin Luther King Jr. said. He said, the days of segregation are over. You can be certain of that. The only thing uncertain about it is how costly the segregationists will make the funeral. That is exactly what he said. This is a wake-up call. And the wake-up call that's really necessary here isn't simply that black folks are getting attacked. This is where we lose it time and time again around ending oppression. Because we think that oppression is about discriminating against people. That's not true. The discrimination is not the point of oppression. The discrimination is not the end. The discrimination is the means to an end, and the end is supremacy. And that's what we don't talk enough about. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have empathy for the people that were killed. My God, it's like it boggles the mind. Like, of course we should have empathy. But the man was trying to start a race war. He was very strategic in his targeting. From the Confederate flag to the jacket that he wore that had the flags of the of the apartheid era South Africa, I think it was Rwanda, the pre-Zimbabwe, I think it was. He was totally engrossed in the segregationist, separatist politics. And what I just did at a street corner talk about this a couple of days ago is explaining how this, or any of the other hate crimes, and that includes the way we do war, the way we do mass incarcerating, we need to stand up and start saying, not in my name. See, people want to isolate him and pretend like he's just a lone ranger. No, he might have acted alone, but he represents a state of consciousness. It's one thing to say Black Lives Matter, that's true. But it's a whole nother thing to say white lives don't matter more. There's about to be some drama coming down any day now with the U.S. Supreme Court and their ruling about same-sex marriage. It's one thing to say, well, same-sex couples, deserve equal rights and blah, blah, blah. But it's another to say definitively, heterosexual couples are not innately superior just because they're heterosexual. Until we say American lives don't mean more than everybody else's life. And there's a wake-up call that's here. And I hope that we don't miss it by simply mourning the bereaved as opposed to coming head on and saying to people like this young man, give it up. The world you are trying to keep is not the world we want. You're standing by yourself in this. You may be one of us, but you don't represent us. And to me, that's the shift in consciousness that has to happen here. We have to be bold enough to say, this was an act of white supremacy. Yes, it was an attack on the black church, but the black church was just a symbol of what this guy was trying to do. He wanted to kill the pastor. The pastor is a state senator. The pastor's anti-gun control. I mean, he's anti-guns. He's very pro-gun control. You know, the pastor had been really, really adamant. From the accounts of it, that's who he went to kill. The assistant pastor attacked him, and then he just went crazy. Four ministers were killed among that nine. But here's the thing, and I'm not trying to lessen this any, but supremacy is supremacy. We came up against the exact same thing. You talk about dates almost to the day. June 30th, 1974. Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta. Young man comes in there intending to shoot Reverend Martin Luther King Sr. Kills his wife, Alberta, and a deacon. The woman is sitting on the organ bench. Martin Luther King Jr.'s mother was gunned down in her church, a church he had been in her whole life. Her daddy had pastored that church. She married the assistant minister, King Sr., their second son, co-pastored with Daddy King, sitting on the organ bench. And here's the thing. The man was black. The man was black who killed Mrs. King on the organ bench. The woman was black who stabbed King in Harlem. But the guy that stabbed Alberta King in her church, he had a vendetta against Christian ministers. He thought that all Christian ministers were a menace to society. He thought he was being a hero. Once again, trying to send a message. And I just feel like I don't want their dying to be in vain. Did we hear the message? Did we hear the message? This reminds me of 9/11. You know, we're still talking about, we're the victim and the terrorist. Wake up, everybody. The United States wasn't picked out of the yellow pages. Three targets, the White House, the Pentagon, the World Trade Center, the White House, the Pentagon, the World Trade Center, American Airlines, United Airlines, on the emergency number 911. I'm not justifying it, but it's like, how extreme do acts have to be before we wake up and hear the message? And his message was, there should be white supremacy. Y'all are raping our women and taking over the country and blah, blah, blah. And there needs to be apartheid, there needs to be a racial war, and on and on and on. And I hear very few people just speaking about that. We're all around it. Well, it's the Confederate flag. And it was this thing. And it was that. And then we make it about the flag. And everybody's trying to get rid of the flag. No, let's get rid of the white supremacy. That's what we need to get rid of. You know? Jesus said, call the beast out by name. Anyway, you can see I'm pretty passionate about this.
Of course.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, it's like I'm sure everybody is. But this isn't just about some white man came in and shot up some black people in church.
Right.
No. He's trying to do something. He was trying to establish something. And it's like, I hear very clear, oh, this is terrible. You know, people are being killed in their sacred space. Yes, that's wrong. You know, and how can you do that to innocent people? Yes, that's true. And Black Lives Matter, yes, that's true. It's like, yes, all that's true, that's true, that's true. And when is somebody going to just stand up and say, this day is over. We're not going back. Look, Mr. Roof, you got it all wrong. You think it's a them. No, baby, it's a new us. And we are marching forward together. You can't turn us around. This kind of stuff can't turn us around. And just like the people forgave, I've had so many people ask me, you know, how could they do that? How could they do that? I said, if they didn't do that, then those deaths would have been in vain. These people were in Bible study. Bible study. It is demanded of them. I said, and furthermore, did you know that game when your kid's called the cooties? Nobody wants the cooties. Like, people are forgiving him because they don't want that energy. It's like, how can I wash my hands of you? Your evil, your terror, and whatnot. Ooh, baby, you need Jesus. I got to turn you over to the Lord. Because I can't even sit here and be your jailer. And yeah. So what happens from a spiritual standpoint, it's kind of like what King said. Everything unlike where we're trying to go has to come up to be healed. And I'm not trying to be negative, but as we get closer to this election, oh, we going to find out. We going to find out as these people are, quote unquote, trying to take the country back. We're about to get look at America. And we can't hate. We have to keep loving. We have to keep believing in ourselves. We have to keep moving forward. And we have to keep saying no. It won't work. You're not going to divide us. You will not get your race war. We are not going to hate each other. No. To do otherwise would be to let him win.
Right.
Must fail. This must fail. No doubt a much longer answer than you wanted, but that's what I had to say.
Well, if you gave me something shorter than that, I might call you later and I was like, what happened? Like, you just gave me one sentence. What's really going on? Well, but you know, because the thing is, and I want listeners to know, I'm not downplaying what happened. It's my main point was really you know, the incident, I checked it up while you were talking. It happened on the 17th, and Juneteenth mm-hmm. was the 19th, and what you just, it's all the things that are happening, and the Confederate flag is not the first time they've been, well, some people have taken it down. And I guess underneath my question was so much, even without me knowing it, I can really say that, was recognizing that an action does reveal a solution in a way that it's always been there. It's not that people didn't know about the Confederate flag, but now suddenly, and Walmart saying they're not going to sell anything that has that anymore, or Amazon is saying they're not going to sell their apparels anymore. In Georgia, they're looking to redesign the tags. So change is happening. Now, there's a comment in the chat room, which I want to read to you in a minute. But I want to ask you this, and I would say for the benefit of those who are choosing the path of love, the path of forgiveness, and what you said about, you know, as we move forward, anything unlike progress, it's not the words you use, anything unlike progress will be revealed so that we can either dissolve or gotten rid of, like love will always bring up everything that's unlike itself.
Right.
And understanding the country, the history of this country, I can say that makes me go, whoa, we got some interesting future ahead of us, as you said.
Yes.
So this young man represents a state of consciousness. And there are people fighting, and apparently people are taking pictures of their nails saying with the Confederate flag on it, and people saying my ancestors fought for this, and they want their ancestors to be represented, and it's not about hate, it's about representing. So Dylan did what he did, but there are people who are not necessarily, well, let me put it this way, who are not attacking with a gun, but with their words. How do we become part of the healing when what we're seeing with our physical eyes is almost scary? It's violent. And, you know, how do we stand up, if you will, for what we know is truth to be part of the progress that's happening without getting scared? Like, oh my God, I'm afraid. I need to get a security system. I want to take my kids away from school so we can be safe.
You know, we're not listening. Now, I know what I'm about to say is probably going to be really, really unpopular. But we're not listening. Identity is really important. And people are fighting to maintain their identity. And for a lot of them, the Confederate flag really isn't about slavery and all of the rest of that. That they really have pride. And we have not made it safe enough. We have not made it safe enough for the defeated to still be able to be proud. We're not listening. And the more we don't listen, then the more drastic their measures are going to have to be. We say that we're about diversity and we say that we're about inclusion, but it's like everybody but you. And I know that's gonna, you know, I know that's gonna sound like really unpopular, but I get it. I really do. It kind of reminds me. In the early days of when we were changing from just being a gay movement to a gay and lesbian movement, people were like, is that really necessary? And the word lesbian is so blah, 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 and this and that. Why wouldn't your sexuality? And I said, you know what? The word lesbian to us is not about sex. It's not about that. We made the same analogy that we did to being called black. Lesbians just meant from the Isle of Lesbos. The ancient Greeks weren't that homophobic, but they were very, 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 very sexist. And women were not allowed to be artists and, you know, sculptors and musicians and all of the rest of that. In the Greek plays like Romeo and Juliet and whatnot, you know, Juliet was played by young boys. And they would ban the female artists to this island Lesbos. the women just started flocking there, and it became this thriving female culture. And we begin to ask ourselves the same question that we asked about black. Remember, black was a fighting word. Mm-hmm. All you had to say was you black, and the fight was on. It's like, how do we get so brainwashed into thinking that just an association with the geographic location, like coming from Africa, meant bad?
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they're saying. They're saying being from the South doesn't mean bad. It doesn't mean inherently bad. And yet, that's what we've done. We've made it that way. When you see this, this is what the civil rights movement knew and understood. You know, the Martin Luther Kings and all of them understood that the only way this was going to work was that they had to find a way for white people to still be able to be white. Or Nelson Mandela making mm-hmm. de Klerk his vice president.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing this is not going to work till we find a way for the so-called enemy and oppressor for us to work hand in hand. It's not going to work. And whether we want to admit it or not, there is an arrogance, there is a haughtiness, there is a denigration and a degradation on the part of the North and the West about the South,
mm-hmm.
as though they are behind or they're backwards or they're, you know, stupid or ignorant or not progressive or like, you know, or all these other things. And we have marginalized and denigrated, stereotyped, the South. And to a certain extent have backed some of these people into a corner, giving them no other out but to stop being Southern, to be ashamed of being Southern and turn into a Yankee. You know, we're just not listening, that's all. We're not listening. And you could take away that flag, but that is not going to get to the heart of the issue.
Right.
You have proud people who are trying to hang on to a sense of dignity and pride.
Mm-hmm.
Where they don't perceive themselves as being anti-black, but pro their white heritage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're saying everybody else gets to be pro their heritage. You
know, right.
Why can't we be proud of ours? Why do we have to hang our heads in shame? So, you know, I hear all these cries about, you know, let's get rid of the Confederate flag and blah, blah, blah. But what are you going to put in its place? Everybody who's crying for the Confederate flag to be taken down, what are we offering these Southerners? What are we offering? We're not even thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause we're not hearing their cry. You know, it just reminds me of all the discussions going on. It just makes me crazy about gay people and family and marriage and all the rest of that. And I just want to say sometimes, like, the part of me that ain't Reverend Deborah, you know, who the hell are you?
Right.
To tell me what I think and what I feel and what I'm about and,
mm-hmm.
and you know, whether I'm a Christian or if I'm anti-family. I'm like, who are you? Who are you to define my reality? And they're saying the same thing. This love, it ain't no joke. It's love your enemy as well as love your neighbor. Mm-hmm. Love the oppressors, love the persecutors. This is no joke. And I would just say to everybody else, you know, do we have the intent? Do you have the intent to love the gun-toting people?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have the intent to love the racists? I was listening to the other speakers at the local rally, and I was just shocked, particularly since they were ministers. I was just shocked at all this talk about, you know, shun this one, and if, you know, somebody says, or, you know, break off your friendship, and it's like, well, wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. And professing, it was like an evangelical rally, which was unusual for Santa Cruz. But it's like, I don't know what Jesus y'all talking about, but this don't sound like my Jesus. You know, God is calling us and God is talking to us, and you know, God's not talking to the atheists. You know, God's not talking to the murderers. God's not, and I'm thinking, excuse me, my God. Well, my God is. I don't know about your God. It's like that old song, you know, do you know my Jesus? You know, that man is in pain. He's sick, but he's also in a lot of pain. You know, who among us would sit by his side, hold his hand and say, what hurts?
Yes. Yes.
This is grief.
Mm-hmm.
He's grieving.
Mm-hmm.
Now the problem is that you become what you don't forgive. So in his grief, he's caused more grief. But he's grieving a world that he knows has gone by. This is where the soul stuff hits.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reminded of Gandhi. And he said this Muslim man came up to him all angry because the Hindus had killed his 10-year-old boy in the war. And he said, here's what you do. You go find yourself a 10-year-old Hindu boy who's been orphaned in this war, and you take him into your home. He's telling this to a Muslim. You take him into your home, and you raise him to be the best Hindu that he can possibly be. That's when this war will be over. Hate begets hate. Everybody thinking everybody else is wrong. Everybody thinking everybody else is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
It just gets us more of it.
We got some question in the chat room. And the thing that struck me from... several things strikes me, but the what you said about we're not listening... it's like, so it's ringing in my ear. And I think what I see is this sensationalism about this whole thing. So the news are only, I mean, the example of Barack Obama saying nigger, and they're saying she just said it. It's like, you take everything out of context. Listen to what he said. So it seems like the mass media want to focus on things that's going to have people go back and forth. They bring talking heads and they're debating, but they don't deal with the real issue, as you're saying. So part of me is like, gosh, how can we get RFD on CNN? But maybe maybe if your name comes up, because they know you're going to just shut everything down. And what I mean, I'm not even you know, it's like if we bring her on, we won't be able to have a breaking news because she's spoken to, she's going to discredit everything else we bring her. So who is this RFD? Well, we don't really know her. You know, come up with something that's like, oh, I didn't see the name on the list. But we need more. Somehow, I don't know how it's going to happen, but we need more of your voice, this kind of conversation, people who see the way you see to speak up. In the chat room, I'm going to go to the previous question, but just what you were saying about the preachers, Lulu was saying, but what do we do? What do we do about that specifically when people preach to hate, especially preachers? So because I'm going to go by my experience. When I watch MSNBC or CNN, I try to stay away from the other part. I am not that spiritual yet, if you know what I mean. I'm not trying to stay in a hole, but I try to stay away from there because they have a way of triggering me. But there's still this back and forth.
You're not a Fox News fan?
I don't live in a Fox, in a hole. I can't do it. I am not yet. I'm just not that spiritual. I'm not. My brother listened to Fox News in the morning out, and I'm just like, why? And I just breathe that day, breathe. So I'm not that spiritual. They have a way of letting me know I got work to do. Now, the question in the chat room is, as far as supremacy, isn't that white people who need to hear the message? People who benefit from the system don't want to hear it, don't want to change the system. Not all people, but some. So she'd asked this question earlier.
But here's the thing. Mm-hmm. See, here's the thing. What we have to remember is that we have to empower our allies. Okay, those of us who are black or people of color, we got to empower our white allies. They get stuck in moments like this. They're dumbfounded. They don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. It's like they really don't. And they don't know the voice. They don't know the language. And when it comes to things like hate crimes, people have to stand up to their own group.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter what women do. Until men make it wrong to rape a woman, nothing's going to happen. You know, we wouldn't be as far as we are now with LGBT issues if it weren't for the heterosexual allies. We wouldn't have gotten as far as we gotten with the civil rights movement. Martin Luther King Jr. got thrown out of the Baptist Convention. And he started the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and made it interfaith and multiracial. And it was an interfaith multiracial coalition that won the civil rights movement. Not operating on your own.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to learn to engage. We got to learn how to walk hand in hand. We have to learn how to empower each other. And people have to be taught. We have to teach each other. But we won't name it. And that's where we have to empower each other to be able to name it.
You say, well, you're not sure if we'll do it?
We have to show up. It's back to this. Somebody has to be willing to have the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And we can make it okay for the conversation to be had. You see, it's like if I'm having a conversation with somebody about this, And we can sit there and talk about all what's happened to black people and all what's happened to the folks in the black church and all the rest of that, and isn't that bad and isn't that terrible, and they tell me about all the black friends they have and, you know, and all what their grandmamas did for the black folks. And, you know, it's like, okay, that's fine. But somebody's got to name the beast. Somebody in the conversation has to say, this guy believes in apartheid. And we're not going there. This guy wanted a race war. And we're not going to do that. This guy even burnt the American flag and was wearing three flags around white supremacy. If you don't get it, you know, it's like, not even just here in the United States. He's wearing the South African apartheid flag. It's like we have to reject that. We have to denounce that very unequivocally. It isn't about the flag. You know what I'm saying? It's like it's much easier for us to talk about a flag than to say the word supremacy.
Mm-hmm.
We can all run around and say, oh, you know, you shouldn't have a Confederate flag, the Confederate flag. It ain't about the Confederate flag. It's about supremacy. Can we talk about that? Otherwise, we get stuck on symbols. And you could take every Confederate flag down from here, you know, to the tip of Florida. And that's not going to end what's in people's hearts. Because they think they have to do it. They think other people
right.
are behind them.
Right.
See?
Right.
They think that they're doing it, that they're, you know, even said, well, you know, I guess I got to be the brave one to do it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But that's when the nation has to stand up and say, no. No. We don't want this. Not just, we don't want you killing people in churches.
Mm-hmm.
But the cause for which you're fighting is not one for which you have any support.
Hmm.
Can you feel how that's a different conversation?
Yes.
I just, you know, you shouldn't oppress and denigrate and bomb and, you know, kill black folks because their lives matter. But the war that you're fighting is over. Over. Give it up. Because the rest of us, we don't want it.
I want to ask you this quick question because it's really on me, and Lulu's in the chat room too. She's fired up in the chat room and she's got a lot of comments and questions. So I really do what you said about we're not listening. And it seems like, in general, black people feel justified to say our pain is worse than yours. And look at what you've been doing to us. So we don't need to listen to you. You've been oppressing us for all. So how do we start to listen? Because it seems like that you said this on one of your shows before, that there's a soul wound that is just so painful to even acknowledge, like, oh, I feel something in my back. It's like, we just pretend there's no pain. It's like, well, if you didn't put that there and I didn't trip over it, I won't be in pain. But the real pain needs to be addressed. And the pain is,
yeah.
I would say, we have to confront ourselves. So how do we get people, even if not the whole of America or half of America, but people in our own community who are saying, well, you know what white people have done to us? How do we have a conversation with helping them listen to the voice of the other, the white people, the Southerners?
You have to have the intent. Mm-hmm. Really. That, I mean, it really boils down to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you... Are we going to be hypocrites? Are you willing to give what you say you want to have? Will you give what you say you want to have? Will you demonstrate it? Will you show what it looks like? Will you be a living example of your words and the values that you say that you are putting forth? If it's going to be all of us, it's got to mean all of us. Compassion knows no boundaries. And what I find is that we misunderstand. We don't see the pain. It's just like with black people. They think we're just always mad. We're hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But people can't see our hurt. They just see the violence. Mm-hmm. But they don't see the hurt. And doesn't that frustrate us?
Mm-hmm.
You know, cities go up in flame, and it's just, oh, just a bunch of hoodlums, you know. Angry black people burning everything down. And it's like, well, wait a minute. We know there's something else, but it's the same thing with white people. Well, it's just a bunch of angry, you know, redneck white people shooting up, killing everybody. You know, then we're just as dismissive as the white people are to us. It doesn't matter who's dismissing whom. It's the fact that the dismissal is taking place at all.
Yeah.
It starts with the intent. When you see stuff like that, stuff, just how much pain does somebody have to be in to do something like that? What is it that he's fighting for? You know, what is that? You don't have to agree. I'm not asking to agree, but we can't ever see what's going on. You know, it's just like 9/11. Like, are we listening? What would be so important that people would be willing to commit suicide at that kind of level just to bring the attention to something? And we're still not seeing what they were trying to bring the attention to. This imam, this Muslim chaplain that I work with in the prison, you know, I think he said it the best. When he was talking about these things, he said, every baby speaks the same language. Yeah, all babies. He said, and you begin to learn, you know, this, that, you know, means I'm wet. I'm hungry. You know, this one means this, this one means that. And he just went on and he said, and at what point did you stop hearing my cry? When we see stuff like that, it's a soul cry. What are we not hearing? If this was a family, okay, and one of your kids did something crazy like that, went and burned some stuff down or you know, blew up somebody or shot some people up, wouldn't you at some point go, what?
Right.
What? What is eating this child of mine alive? What? But when we become just as self-righteous as he is, then all this really does become in vain.
Yeah.
Hmm. we're not listening. And the more we push on this stuff about getting rid of the symbols, Howard Thurman has one of his essays, Think Twice Before You Remove Your Neighbor's Landmarks.
No, that's right.
The more we push for that without the listening, the more retaliation. I personally, and I got to go because there's a party happening here I need to go to. One of my staff members
right.
is leaving.
Okay.
I personally believe in freedom of speech. I really do. And as much as I don't like Confederate flags or swastikas, or a whole bunch of stuff, where I draw the line is government. Like, you know, a courtroom or a government office building or something like that. Because when you fly a flag, that is the indication that you're loyal to, and living under the laws and the jurisdiction of that, you know, which is why typically they'll have the federal flag and the state flag,
right.
you know, both in the room at the same time. And I think it's real important that we make no mistake about what it is that we're loyal to and under whose rules. You know, we're operating. So in that vein, I would say, you know, public places, you know, government place, that stuff got to come down. But you, your house, your backyard, your car, you know, your whatever, my personal feeling is that you either believe in First Amendment rights or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want anybody making me take off anything. You know? I don't even want to hear it. Don't even tell me how offensive something about me is. I'm telling you.
I hear it.
You know.
I hear it. Well, I would say that even though the mainstream media might be threatened by you, I want us to have more conversation like this. LCI is not threatened by your truth and what you have to share. Because I really believe this is what we need now. People are struggling, collapsing spiritual truth with reality. We keep them separate. And you have a way of just marrying the two. And yes. It's needed now.
And, you know, I don't think I've ever said it quite as clearly as that. but I will. We have not been listening.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. We are fed. Have a good evening.
All right, take care.
Life is good, is getting better. Thank you, Lulu, in the chat room. I feel you, I hear you. And usually when Rev D is done, I don't really have much to say. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I have a little bit more to say. So I'll just take this opportunity to let you know that tomorrow, speaking of love in action, I'm teaching a class. It's a teleclass, so it's online, 9 p.m. Pacific. No, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. I have to think about the time zone. It's called The Art of Loving. And we get to look at love from a romantic perspective, how we are blocking ourselves from what we say we want, how to love someone from a different religion, how to love the murderer. Because if you can't love the murderer, you still have work to do around love, because true love is a choice. So to find out more about The Art of Loving, go to 12academy.com, 12academy.com. It's a four-week class, and it will be, thank you, Lulu, thank you very much. It will be recorded, so if you register and you get there late or have to leave too soon or whatever, you'll still get a copy of the class. And then even if you don't participate in first class, you can always join us in the second one. All that we need now is prayer. Well, that's one of the things we need. What I'm standing for is a prayer to shift our consciousness, to set a deeper intent, to listen, if not to the other, to listen to ourselves, to listen to our own pain. And the more we listen to our own pain, not from a place of trying to make ourselves right or wrong, but just listen to the pain. Because when you can be with your pain, you can be with others' pain. If you can't be with yours, you don't even want to hear what they have to say. You've been listening to Living in the Yes with Reverend Dr. Deborah L. Johnson. I am Ade, Ade Anifoshi, life coach Ade, the shift steerer. Join me for The Art of Loving tomorrow on 12academy.com. Register now. And I have a coupon for you, discount. It's GZJ67S. That's the coupon code. That's G, gratitude, J. No, it's not. Let me make sure I get it right. G, I think it's Z. I have it somewhere. I got it somewhere. Stay with me. Yeah, here it is. G, gratitude, Z, zebra, J, love, 67S, spirit. You'll get a 10% discount. Let's pray for ourselves. Let's declare what is true. Prayer is a shift in consciousness. We started with the Agape Choir. See the best. We're seeing the best in each other. And we know that there's some people hurting today. And it might just be you. Someone needs a prayer. Be the answered prayer. We love you. We bless you. We appreciate you. And we thank God for you. Nikki Harris is the soloist on this song. AgapeLive.com is their virtual home. Peace in and peace out.
The world is in need of what you say. Did you answer the call and pray? You see, so many are seeking the way to go. And they need your love. I know it can. just listen to the Spirit. It's telling you, to heed the Holy Call.
Life Conversations. It's all about positivity. It's all about self-empowerment. It's all about Life Conversations.
Hi, I'm Mark Victor Hansen. I want you to be listening to Life Conversations. My friends are running it, and they do the best hosting on the planet. Enjoy the show.
Life Conversations Radio. Be the change you want to see.